In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams joining us right here in studio. Happy Monday.
And to you as well.
Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you as well.
How was your weekend?
It's good. Busy.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot going on.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was, I mean, not in a bad way necessarily, but it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, you just sort of, well, you forget how busy weekends can be if you do stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've never heard of that. I don't know if I subscribe to that notion, but I suppose there are people that do that.
Right. Yeah, but, saw a couple of movies, went to see a couple of plays, did some yard work.
Ooh, man.
You know, really, wore shorts all weekend, which I was pretty stoked for. By the way, happy long sleeves and shorts season to all who celebrate.
It is the best season of the year, as we know. You mentioned you saw some theater. You want to take a couple minutes to talk about that before we get to the movies?
Yeah, let's chat about that for a second. So I saw two things this weekend. I went to see on Saturday night, opening night, I went to see the wonderful Matt and Ben, Penobscot Theater Company's latest production. It's one of those shows, I'll tell you, honestly, folks, the less you know, the better. It gets weird, starting from the premise that it's basically we're in the mid-90s. It's Matt Damon and Ben Affleck being played by two women.
Jen and Tina, who were here with us last week.
Yes, who are both marvelous, by the way. And it's the story of how Good Will Hunting came to be, but it is not at all what you might expect.
Including, as Jen let us know, a knockdown, drag-out fight late in the show.
Yeah, no, they there's, frankly, an extended piece of stage combat that is, just delightful. And, if you're lucky, you might get one of the happy accidents that we got to see in our performance. I'm not gonna spoil it, but someone sits on something that they weren't necessarily supposed to sit on.
Oh, my.
And it's hilarious. But no, it's this wonderful sort of examination of this friendship through and it's sort of refracted through a more feminine the lens of feminine energy, which I think really results in something that is heartfelt and sweet and very funny and at times just wildly absurd, and it's just a really good time. And it's a very short show, very quick. It moves very quickly, but the energy is great, the performances are great. Anyone who has fond memories, just fond memories of the 1990s in general, I think they're going to have a really good time at Matt and Ben.
Excellent. And what else did you see?
I went to see Shuttersome.
Oh, yeah, 10
the,
bucks.
The
yeah.
collection of Poe adaptations being presented by the folks at 10 Bucks Theater. It's that was a really wonderful sort of experience as well. Very different, as you might imagine, from something like Matt and Ben. And it was interesting. I wasn't familiar with this particular sort of show, and so I didn't know like what Poe stories were going to be addressed. And so you get some that you expect, like the Telltale Heart is in there, the Raven, you get things like, there are a couple of wonderful poetic dramatizations. There's The Bells is very cool. They do a wordless sort of almost dream ballet of The Portrait, which is really fascinating to watch. And one that I was completely unfamiliar with called The Lionizer, that I don't believe I'd ever read it before. Hmm. But it was... Yeah, and so you just have all this wonderful sort of these different, presented theatrically, but everybody's basically in concert blacks. Like, it's not like, minimal set pieces and stuff like that. It's all about the storytelling. And for this season, like, it's a really wonderful fit. A lot of wonderful actors, 10 bucks veterans, newcomers alike, directed by Ben Lehman. And just a lovely time at their space over there at the Bangor Mall. And they're running one more weekend So if you're looking for something something spooky to do ahead of your Halloween celebrations, you should really probably check it out.
No, that's awesome. Alan Adams with us here. Let's talk movies. You saw a couple of note this week, Black Adam and Ticket to Paradise. Where would you like to begin?
You know, it's funny because ordinarily, like, you know, with these sorts of movies, you would think that I would, like, at least one of them, I would feel, like, particularly strongly about.
Mm.
They're both fine. Like, it's not like, I think I probably had a better time Ticket to Paradise. They're both perfectly fine movies that, you know, made a bunch of money at the box office this weekend. Neither one of them really blew my hair back. I guess we'll say that.
Yep.
Let's talk about Black Adam because, I don't know. I know Carrie's a DC guy. Were you a Captain Marvel family follower at all? Was that really your thing?
I was aware of Captain Marvel, and I know the sort of the Black Adam revival was after I had sort of stopped reading comics on a regular basis. So I am aware of the story that the movie is based on, but it wasn't one that I read or followed.
Yeah, because, you know, from in the beginnings, Black Adam was you know, a pretty bog standard villainy, like just basically like your best, basically like your evil Captain Marvel. Like that was basically what the deal was. But in recent years, the character's sort of been reinvented as this kind of anti-hero protector of this sort of fictional country called Kandak. And, and so becoming more of a method behind the madness kind of, you know, more of a gray area guy instead of a white hat, black hat kind of situation. And that's the movie that we're getting here. A movie which, again, can't be stressed enough, 1,000% does not exist if The Rock doesn't want to play the part. Like, I really firmly believe that. Like, he's been chasing this part for decades. Like, I mean, they first announced it as a possibility, as like, this is coming, like almost 10 years ago. It was like 2014, I think, when the first announcement about him playing this part was first thrown out there. But the reality is, like, I mean, frankly, it's stunning that it's taken him this long to be in one of these superhero movies. And no, the Fast and Furious movies don't count, although it's basically the same thing. I'm going to try to do like some plot stuff here. It's honestly, there's the what plot there is pretty convoluted, and they don't necessarily worry too much about sticking too close to it, eschewing all that in favor of more action set pieces and superhero fights and whatever, which, by the way, not mad about, because the action and the sort of set pieces are actually pretty solid across the board in this one. But we start off in the year 2600 BCE. We're in this country of Kandak, and it's been taken over by an evil tyrant who's forced the population into subservience to mine a magical ore called Eternium, because comic books and comic book movies are just awful about naming things. Eternium needs Eternium to forge this crown that is called the Crown of Sabacc. Sabacc being this sort of demonic entity that will give him the power to rule the world, or whatever it is that, evil tyrants who want magic crowns want to do. A young boy tries to get the people to rise up. He's captured, condemned to death, but before he can be killed, he is rescued by the Council of Wizards, the same Wizards Council that gave Billy Batson his powers in the Shazam movie a few years ago. They bestow their powers on this young boy, and he becomes the champion of Kandak, fights the king. There's a huge knockdown, drag out, and the castle is destroyed, and everybody, everybody perishes. Or do they? We come to the present day, and we have an archaeologist working in Kandak. The country has been sort of taken over by the global criminal syndicate known as Intergang. But she's on a quest to locate the lost Crown of Sabacc. And she's got some, her brother helps her, and you know, a couple of other people, her young son. She goes, she tries to get the crown. She's, you know, she's cornered and betrayed and cornered by the Intergang folks. She's got no choice but to try. She doesn't know if this is going to work, but to try to summon forth the champion of Kandak. And wouldn't you know it, he shows up. It's The Rock. And he just starts murdering people. Like, just, I mean, this was one of the surprising things for me for this movie was the superhero movies, as a rule, don't tend to do a lot of on-screen killing. Like, it's a lot of, like, they're it's implied, and there's a lot of collateral damage that sort of happens on the periphery. But nope, like, he's just straight up, like, just murdering dudes left and right. And granted, they're all, like, you know, they're all bad dudes, but, you know, it's still, like, you don't expect your superheroes to just start just lightning blasting nameless thugs over and over again. But so word gets out about this, as you might imagine. Well, something's got to be done. And so the powers that be in the U.S. government enlist the Justice Society of America, led by Carter Hall, otherwise known as Hawkman. Played by Aldous Hodge, who's great in this, and I imagine that he's going to be a pretty pivotal part in the DCEU going forward. He's also accompanied by his longtime friend and companion, Dr. Fate, played just wonderfully by Pierce Brosnan. And then a couple of sort of younger legacy heroes, a young lady who controls, like, wind stuff, named Cyclone, played by Quintessa Swindell, and a guy named size-changing guy named Adam Smasher, played by Noah Centineo, now they're both one's the granddaughter of the original Red Tornado, Ma Hunkel, mm-hmm. Which Carrie gets, and maybe two other people who are listening might understand who that is, and then we have Adam Smasher, who is the nephew or great nephew of the original Adam, Al Pratt, played in a wonderful FaceTime cameo by none other than friend of downtown Henry Winkler.
Oh, awesome.
He's only on screen for a couple minutes, but it's like as soon as he turned up, I'm like, oh, yes, that's fantastic. Anyway, so this team has to go to Kandak to basically subdue Black Adam. Goes about as well as you'd expect. Black Adam is operating in a realm where his version of justice is much darker than that of the Justice Society, and we spend the rest of the movie with basically watching him try to reconcile the two and decide which sort of hero, for lack of a better word, he wants to be. I'm not going to get granular with it because it doesn't really matter anyway. This is a 2-hour movie with about 40 minutes of plot, and everything else is just like explosions and superpowers and punching, which again, can't be stressed enough, I am okay with. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's a decent superhero movie. Like, it's far from the worst that we've seen from the DCEU. It's not the best. The Rock is perfect in this part. Like, he just glowers his way through it and, you know, does his usual tough guy shtick, which is great. You know, the other performances, Aldous Hodge, I like him very much. And I'm really glad that they got someone, with some chops to sort of, you know, occupy that Hawkman space. I hope that continues forward. Pierce Brosnan, I don't know if it's an actor choice or if he genuinely just wasn't sure what was going on, but like he just he drifts through this movie like with this just slight smile of bemusement on his face that is just it just suits what's happening perfectly. I don't know if that's the character or if that's Pierce Brosnan, but whatever it is, it absolutely works. Here's where I know, and I'm gonna get nerdy for a second, not because I haven't been yet,
right.
But, and Carrie will appreciate this. When I first heard that the Justice Society was part of this, I'm like, ooh, it's going to be a period piece. Because the Justice Society of America is very much sort of a World War II era super team. And so I'm like, oh, okay, so they're going to, and then it is not. It's set in the present day. And that's fine, and they did a wonderful job with it. But it's like, there's a part of me that's like, well, don't call it the Justice Society of America then. Like, you like Kerry feels me. He knows.
But I will say they did do a very interesting thing in that they did what they have done in the comic books. So there are characters that were part of the Golden Age, Hawkman and Dr. Fate, that are still part of the JSA in the modern day comic book continuity.
Interesting.
For various comic book reasons. Fate is a magical being. The Hawkman character is a reincarnated character. So they continue that legacy from the 40s when they were original to the current day and have added new members. So it is sort of comic correct in that way.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I know like the generational aspect, like, you know, like I remember when they tried to make Infinity Incorporated happen, you know, and so like I think these characters, some of these younger characters, are sort of drawn from that area as well. But it, you know, it worked. Like they were all everyone you know, delivered on their standard superheroics. It's a movie unafraid of slow-mo. I'll tell you that right now. This movie probably has a runtime of about an hour and 40 minutes if you run everything at regular speed. But again, it's okay. It looks good. Don't worry about the story. It doesn't really matter. Like you'll get the big bad will show up. You'll figure out how that's going to go pretty early on. When it finally arrives, it is suitably big and bombastic, and you know, there's the superheroic aspect of it, and then there are the regular folks who are just, you know, trying to remind our man Black Adam, you know, what it means to be human, and finding that balance, you know, and they try to shoehorn some fairly complex ideas, some stuff like colonialism, like some weird geopolitics, like the idea of you know, the notion of America as the world's policeman is sort of addressed, kind of, and then immediately dismissed because it's a superhero movie and it is not at all equipped to deal with this with the sort of delicacy that it would need to deal with. But it's in there, along with, you know, a lot of other sort of appropriated mythos from various cultures. But yeah, it's fun. Like, I had a good time. And that's really all I'm asking for from these movies. Like, I don't need this movie to be some sort of like paradigm shifter. I just want to watch The Rock, who, again, can't be stressed enough, is clearly delighted to be doing this. Just throw The Rock out there in some spandex, you know, have him shoot some lightning and punch some guys, and you know, try and fail to deliver a couple of catchphrases, and we're on our way.
All right, that's one this week. The other end of the spectrum, Julia Roberts and George Clooney. Reunited in what looks like a frothy piece called Ticket to Paradise.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if you've seen it. It's been sort of making the rounds the last few days. There was an article, I think it was in the New York Times, that called Clooney and Roberts the Tracy and Hepburn of the current sort of generation, which I don't know about all that. But they're the closest we're probably ever going to see again. Like, that's one of the things about this movie that I really found sort of interesting, the sort of meta narrative surrounding it, which is we've talked multiple times about the decline of the romantic comedy, the shift from, you know, major studios making these movies to the sort of streamer, sort of the streamer fare that has been the residence of most rom-coms in recent years. So this movie kind of felt like a little bit of a throwback. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, you remember when all you had to do was take two attractive A-listers, throw them into a plot that may or may not make sense, stick it in a beautiful locale, and just print money. Like, that's, those times are gone, which is kind of crazy to think about, because it was such a sort of central tenet of the cinematic landscape for a stretch. But in that way, like, that's kind of what we're getting here, because you got Clooney and Roberts, who are to be fair, maybe coasting a little bit on their not insignificant chemistry and their respective screen presence and charm. You know, it's set in Bali, so you have this wonderful natural landscape surrounding you throughout. You've got a plot that is that really lends itself to shenanigans, and that's really all you need. And so, is this the greatest romantic comedy ever? No, like this does not live up to the Tracy Hepburn screwball comedies. It's not even necessarily up to what we expect from like the Nora Ephrons and Nancy Myers of the world, but it's good. Like, and so I really enjoyed myself. And Sheridan also really enjoyed herself, and it was nice to just sort of sit and watch a movie that as soon as we learned that it existed, we were kind of looking forward to, because again, we share an affection for romantic comedies. And so to see one sort of being put forth with a little bit more oomph behind it was kind of nice. The basic gist is we have the Cottons. We have David, that's George Clooney, and Georgia, that's Julia Roberts. They are a divorced couple. He's an architect. She is an art buyer. They've been divorced for almost 20 years, after being married for a much briefer period of time. They are openly hostile and antagonistic toward one another. There are a lot of resentments still being born between the two of them. And in fact, the only thing on which they can agree is that their daughter Lily, played by Caitlin Dever, who is very much having a moment, like, she's the greatest. Like, that's the one thing they agree on. So they encounter one another again at Lily's law school graduation. They're very proud and very celebratory, really just like, isn't our girl the best? Lily, apparently a very good law school graduate, because she's got a job lined up with an extremely prestigious law firm, decides that before she starts the job, to celebrate graduation, she and her party girl roommate Ren, played by Billy Lord, decide they're gonna go to Bali for a while. They're gonna just go to Bali and sort of relax, rest, etc. And so off they go, and they're having a good time. And then it happens. The meet cute. Lily meets Getty, a young Balinese man who is a seaweed farmer. He's very handsome and smart and charming, and he farms seaweed. And they start spending time together. And then before you know it, David and Georgia are receiving phone calls telling them that, Lily's going to get married.
Mm.
She's going to marry the seaweed farmer.
I could see it coming.
And, that just won't do. And these two hop on a plane to Bali, and they're going to go and... They're gonna try to stop the wedding, but they're not gonna tell her that they're trying to stop the wedding. Oh no! They are going to put on a facade of support, and then sneakily, secretly try to sabotage the wedding. As these things go, just hijinks abound, Rich. They abound, and we get to see them sort of their combative nature. Starts to crumble a little bit as they spend time together, and they find themselves united in common cause to try and prevent what they believe is a big mistake on the part of their daughter. But the more time they spend in this place with these people, they each start to have questions. It's like, well, is this, maybe it's less important what we want and more important what she wants.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it, whether or not they get there, well, you'll have to wait and see, but you can probably guess.
I think I know.
it's fun. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's very light. It's very quippy. There's a lot of you know, George Clooney like arching his eyebrows and Julia Roberts, you know, smiling awkwardly and just doing all the things that make them movie stars, which is great. And again, they're so good together. And so you get to see them sort of really lean into that, that energy, which is great. Caitlin Dever, tremendously talented. We talked about her the other day. She was the star of Rosalind. She's so good. She's good here. Doesn't get a ton to do. Like, she's kind of, she and the young man playing Getty both, they do great. They do a great job, but they're kind of plot device-y. Like, it's really not their movie, despite their relationship sort of, you know, forming the central conflict. But yeah, they're good. The rest of the supporting cast also, very strong, but really it boils down to Clooney and Roberts doing Clooney and Roberts things. And, look, man, like, I'm obviously, folks out there, your mileage may vary, but I really like movie stars doing movie star stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I like watching that, and that's very much what this movie is. So, yeah, if you're a fan of the old school sort of rom-com, you know, featuring people who aren't teenagers, you should check this out because, yeah, all I could say is my wife and I had a marvelous time.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Hey, want to mention what's coming up this weekend?
I do, very much. Yeah, so the folks group is back at it. We are doing a Halloween show for the first time in a very long time. This Friday at the Bangor Arts Exchange, 8 o'clock. Tickets are $10 at the door. You can buy them in advance through the Bangor Arts Exchange website if you so choose. Yeah, we're going to go. We're gonna do scary stuff. No, we're not. We're not going to do scary stuff. We're gonna probably just probably gonna yell a lot, do some cursing. I might fall down, you know, the usual.
But with a Halloween theme.
Yes, we will probably make jokes about trick or treating and movie monsters and you know and eldritch rites to part the dimensional veil.
And look, all I can say is I know that Alan and Sheridan give out the full-size candy bars at home. You never know what they'll have at a show.
It could be. There could be candy. I'm not going to say there is going to be candy. There might be candy. There might be a lot of things. Who knows?
You pay your $10, you find out.
That's right. That's the only way to know. You gotta pay to play, folks.
There you go.
You gotta pay to play.
Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams with us on Downtown.